afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Wednesday, June 27th, 2018. Hello, Dave.
Happy hump day, Melody.
Yes, it is Wednesday, and on Wednesdays we have our good friend Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. She's going to join us for the first segment of the program today, so let's get to my part of the program, and that is the market report today. And they continue to hammer gold, down another $720 at $1,252 for the day. Silver was down 27 cents at $16.10. Platinum down 11 at 861, and palladium was down the same at $955. The USDX today, of course, is getting stronger, up big today at 0.70 at 95.37. Crude oil, another huge day after yesterday. It was up over $2. Today it's up 1.77 at 72.30. And the paper markets today, you'd think that they would be on a tear, but they're not. They reversed. They're down 165 points, the Dow, at 24,118. You have the NASDAQ down 116 points, a little over 1.5%, big down day for the NASDAQ. Of course, it's way overvalued anyway, but 7,445, like they all are. The S&P is down 23 points at $2,699. 10-year yield, that was down, you know, 1.84%, 2.83%. So it's telling me there are buys going into the bonds. Pressure on the euro, that was down 70 cents at 116. Hong Kong was down big overnight, almost 2%. European markets, most of them were up slightly overnight. And so still pressure on the Bitcoin business. And I have a little article about the cryptocurrency influencers, those who write the articles, how much they get paid for their tweets. And I mean, it's incredible. So it makes you wonder, for all of those who invest in the cryptocurrencies, what and who are you following? You know, what is anybody even talking fundamentals? And what are the fundamentals? Or is it just these techno people that get paid to write articles and to influence people to purchase their cryptocurrencies? But we'll talk about that after the first segment of the program, because we have Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. And hello, Dave.
Hi there.
I thought we'd talk about the deadly assumptions.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, the definition of assumption is to accept as true or as certain without any proof. And some suggest that, you know, an educated guess or a theory is an assumption. But here's a question. What percentage of scientific medicine is merely an assumption without any hard proof supporting treatment? And what percentage of Americans assumes their doctors have the answers and the treatments that can actually heal serious disease? These are all good questions. Hope we can answer them in the first few minutes that we have, because I think it's real important to check with the scientific-minded experts to help answer some of these questions. So, for instance, in 2005, the U.S. National Library of Medicine and Institutes of Health, they actually published a report that was titled Why Most Published Research Findings Are False. So this was an investigation that was launched because of the growing concern that research and scientists and physicians were, you know, changing data results in order to present a more positive outcome for, you know, more funding for the research and for various accolades in their profession. So research in medicine affects patients. And we're not talking about honest mistakes. We're talking about willful deception. So when you falsify the research, that would kind of trickle down to highly influence patient treatments for, you know, personal gain. And that should be a criminal offense, really. So there's also the problem of scientists setting up studies improperly or inadequately, causing results to be affected. So here is a quote from John Leonis. He's with the Department of Hygiene and Epidemiology, University School of Medicine in Greece, because this isn't just a U.S. problem, this is an international problem. He says, simulations show that for most study designs and settings, it's more likely for the research claim to be false than true. Moreover, in many current scientific fields, the claim to research findings may be from prevailing bias. So a lot of times, you know, you get some research that gets published, and then future research is based on that data set. And so then that research in the future is going to be off as well. So I want you to hear this. This is some astonishing and sobering statements. This is from, again, John Leonis. He says, it's impossible to know with 100% certainty what the truth is in any research. In this regard, the gold standard is unattainable, end of quote. And then Richard Smith, he's a biophysicist, and he's the former editor of the British Medical Journal. He said, most scientific studies are wrong, and they are wrong because scientists are interested in funding and careers rather than truth, end of quote. So we've got some scientists that are saying, you know, this is a not isolated one or two thing. This is maybe 50% or more of the research coming out is wrong, and a lot of scientific treatments are based on it.
50%?
More than 50% in some cases. Wow. One guy thought it was more like 75%.
Good grief.
I know. That's what I said. Well, you know, now according to Richard Smith, you know, being wrong in research, he says, is normal for science. He describes it as an industry that has an extensive, quote, theory graveyard. So he says theories are always being adjusted. New data can actually destroy them. He reminds us that theories are not hardcore facts, but merely a best guess. Therefore, medical science is a working theory. And scientists and physicians understand this, but patients rarely grasp that importance. So at any moment, new data can make hundreds of treatments obsolete or worse, prove the treatments were detrimental. So, you know, does that give you some perspective?
So how do you find the research that's questionable?
Well, I mean, they really need to, next time I'm working on a paper that we've got some people trying to address this ethic thing within this whole thing, and it's a global struggle, and the thing is, you know, there's just no accountability for these guys, and so if you don't have any punishment to go with fraud, then you're not going to get the fraud to stop. So, you know, you've got to have, you know, it's just like a child. You raise up a child, when they misbehave, you got to punish them. If you don't punish them, you're going to have a narcissist on your hand. All right? So you spare the rod, you spoil the scientist. Okay?
Yeah, but you know what? That's in every industry, though. Particularly in today's world.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of corruption, and we talk about it all the time. You know, they admit, they pay fines. There's never any, really, truly any, nobody says they did anything wrong. There's no jail sentences.
Well, they're not even calling it fraud. They're calling it, you know, misconduct. It's fraud. When it's willful, it's fraud, okay? And, you know, you and I go to jail for that.
Yes.
So, you know, we got to change that right away. Well, I want to talk about some testing results real quick, because this was interesting, because, you know, what do they do in scientific studies to test their theory? You got any ideas? What is the general, you know, study set up on?
Patients.
Well, no.
Is that what you mean?
They use lab animals.
Lab animals.
Yeah. They do the lab animal thing before they can get clearance to go to people. Well, now, there was a reporter and author, Richard Harris. He was revealing some interesting thing about the animal trial tests for drugs. Often, they say, have different outcomes because, you know, animals and humans are different. So he says, why are mice and other lab animals used in medicine to test drugs? Because, you know, we've been told that mice have metabolisms closest to the human one, and they're a good stand-in prototype. Well, according to anthropologist Todd Prius of Emory University, he says, quote, the truth is, initially, scientists were studying rats and mice to better understand them, not for the purpose of becoming lab animals. He goes on to say that rats are not generic mammals, and scientists are sold on the assumption that they could use them to learn about the human system to cure almost any disease by testing animals. He says rats and humans are not the same. They have no similar features. Uh-oh. Hmm. So he goes on to say, this is a quote.
I know some human rats.
Well, Prius goes on to say, it should come as no surprise that the drug that works in a mouse or a rat often does not work in a person. However, by the time this becomes evident, there were entire scientific industries built upon this assumption and tremendous pressure to keep the status quo. He says, additionally, there were decades of disease studies that were done on the same type of animal, and funding agencies and journals expected to see this. Therefore, it is suspected that there are thousands of studies built upon faulty research. End of quote. So here's what's really the kicker. The rat and mice industry for scientific research is a huge business. Some universities provide these lab animals, and we're told that hundreds of facilities now nationwide offer animals for research. So rats, mice, and other animals are raised for experimental purposes. Now, one company, River Laboratories, made $90 million in 1 year, and there are six other such labs in the United States. So they're selling highly manipulated GMO mice with tailored breeding, costing $100 to $200 a piece.
Good grief.
I know. So this highly controlled industry offers lab animals that obviously aren't the same genetically as the first generation of lab animals. And so Prius is saying this, with regard to the level of manipulation in the lab animals sold to research, trying to control everything possible, the result is the scientists learn absolutely nothing. And Gregory Pesco, he's also a neuroscientist with Weill Cornell Medical College, he says scientists make far too many assumptions about the underlying biology of disease when creating animal models. It is probably only when you try your treatments on people that will give you an idea of how right your assumptions were. And he goes on to say, in scientific research, the assumptions are often poor or misleading. Scientists have been led astray for years by relying heavily on animal models. Mice and rats are not simplified humans, and science should stop thinking that they are. However, breaking the culture that is hampering them is really hard, with many afraid it would backfire on them. However, if we want a better understanding of disease and treatments for disease, it must be done. And I'm saying, well, is this the reason we have disease management instead of cures?
Oh, good point.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and for this reason and more, Americans once, trusted their doctor, but, that's in decline. There's a report that came in the New York Times in January that said there's this growing distrust with regards to medicine. And so, according to the report, they said in 1966, 75% of the U.S. population had unshakable confidence in their medical doctor. Today, that number of Americans with that same level of trust is a mere 34%. And they gave reasons why there's this weakened trust. I can't disagree with them. The cost and red tape with healthcare, the vaccine doubt of vaccine effectiveness, and the manufacturers exempt from liability. On-demand access to information on medical procedures and drug side effects. People are more educated now. Personal experience, technology that's replacing patient-doctor relationships. Older Americans don't like that. Also, questioning practitioners' motives with conflicts of interest, as well as medical research fraud with no transparency or accountability and corruption, outrageous cost of medications, questioning motives of government and healthcare systems as a whole, and also mandated health insurance. So this is all eroding the trust that people are having in medical doctors. They went on to say, in recent disease outbreaks, less than a third of Americans trusted what their health officials had stated, and they felt the information shared was incomplete and not accurate. So a mere 14% trust the government will do the right thing. Goodness.
You know, that is amazing. And you know what? You go back to the cost and the red tape that people have to go through anymore. Mm-hmm. And now you go to see your doctor. You don't even get to see him anymore. You see the nurse practitioner.
It's getting worse. Next, it's Dr. Kiosk. You know, it's like through your computer. How many of these older folks don't have computers, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of these younger generation doctors don't want to have face-to-face interaction with their patients. They don't. This is a world government thing, you know, and they're all these nations are trying to look for ways to rebuild patient trust. So it's not just an American thing. But, you know, trust requires trustworthiness. So can governments be trusted? Because they want to run healthcare. So when patients perceive their health system is more about profit than it is about helping people be well, you're going to have an uphill battle. You are. So I think Americans know that, you know, they may be being deceived in lots of areas, including their healthcare. So they're going to have to seek out the good parts and avoid the bad parts. And so they see the CDC has a patent on human DNA, they ask why. And when they see the government leaders pass laws to protect drug companies from liability lawsuits regarding physical harm from products, they ask why. You know, these are all big questions in the back of our minds, right? It's all about profit mm-hmm. over patients. That's what it is.
You know, I saw a statement where it only takes 5 days to become addicted to an opioid. Mm. 5 days. 5 days.
Well, okay.
And you're right. No one is held accountable.
Well, here it is, 5 days on an opioid. And you said it changes what? An addiction. Your metabolism changes. Yeah, there's a change in your metabolism. Well, if you went from junk food to healthy food diet, your DNA changes in 7 days. So that opioid's doing more than you know. Mm-hmm. So people need to remember healthcare, you know, didn't used to be so complicated. Now, you know, trying to figure out healthcare is trying to grab a vapor. You know, it's just, you know, so when you get back to basics, though, your body responds to nutrition. So people need to think of nutrition. The American diet's just toxic. So you need to change the diet, change lifestyle. Diets are fads. Lifestyle's permanent. So you'll be healthier going the natural way. And if anybody would like a catalog, we have a catalog to send them. And we just started our 4th of July sale of 15% off and free shipping through the 7th. So this is a good time. The toll-free number for a free catalog is 866-229-3663 for Apothecary Herbs to send it to you. 866-229-3663. And, of course, the website's there, thepowerherbs.com, if you have the internet access.
Well, we appreciate it, Wendy. You always bring us such great information. And, you know, healthcare, I can only imagine where it's going to be. I don't even want to say 5 years. How about 6 months? But it certainly is.
A lot of change is coming.
A lot of changes are coming. Mm-hmm. And, well, thank you for joining us today. Dave and I will be back here in just a few short minutes right after these messages. There's no turning back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Please make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And everything is on special today, ladies and gentlemen. We've seen the pressure that we have on gold and silver. We still have the 90% 50-cent pieces. The premium has pulled back a little bit on those, so they're a great buy also. And they're really nice coins for circulated, or Kennedy half dollars and also Ben Franklin dollars. So $25 face value bags. And so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. You know, cryptocurrencies, particularly when you saw Bitcoin almost reach $20,000 and it's pulled back, and everything was, there was half the people who were saying that it was just a Ponzi scheme, and it's and the other half it was a bubble, and the other half was saying no, it's the way the new world currency is going to go. And this really reminds me of the Iraqi dinar push. Because you had a select group of people who did nothing but talk and promote the Iraqi dinar, and they're very powerful in their commentaries. They can sell ice to Eskimos. I mean, they're powerful. They manipulate and provide information that people have sworn on, people have invested on. And this article, it's out of the LA Times, talks about the cryptocurrency influences hype up coin offerings, sometimes making $105,000 a tweet. There's this Paul Angus, he's an engineer, but by night he's crypto non-matron. He's a producer of hot takes on the latest initial coin offerings, who has more than 8,000 subscribers on YouTube. This 43-year-old Scott's online alter ego, it goes on and talks more about him, but you pay him in digital tokens. And but what his job is he talks up these cryptocurrencies. He's become a very similar to the crypto celebrity John McAfee. He's been a promoter for hire for a long time. And he says that in March that he charges $105,000 per tweet. And but the endorsements are playing an even bigger role in ICO marketing after the internet giants, including the Google, Facebook, and Twitter, have moved to ban some of the cryptocurrencies. But the whole point of this is, they just write articles, they tweet, they push in order to get people to buy these cryptocurrencies. So my question is, the reality, the fundamentals of what people are truly buying, have they been that misled into the product that they've been purchasing? And so we've certainly seen the price of Bitcoin slide lately. It was still hovering around 6,100 from the high of 20,000. And I know there's still a lot of people that are very gung-ho on Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies, and that's their own decision and money to gamble with. But so it's interesting, and I don't think the cryptocurrencies are turning out to be exactly what everyone had expected them to be. And you don't hear too much anymore about cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin and so forth, Dave, do you?
Well, they've been flying below the radar, since they fell from greatness several months back. And their trading certainly has gone down. But, unfortunately, too many people think still see them as a get-rich-quick, that they're the dot-com investment of the new millennium. We've got a much cleaner, a much safer alternative for you. How about it, Melody?
If you're really looking at it, was always said that you'll never get rich owning gold and silver. But what gold does provide for you is to purchase your, it protects your purchasing power, and you'll take that and buy the items that will make you extremely wealthy.
It's not going to make you poor.
It's not going to make you poor, and it opens the door for you when the system collapses, and you can buy land pennies on the dollar. When you can buy other investments, you'll sell a portion of your gold, and you'll be the one that'll be able to buy it. And by doing that, it will bring you the wealth. That's where people get wealthy, and by owning gold and silver. But it's not a bad run from $1,200 to $10,000 either. That's wealthy enough for me. I don't need any more wealth than that,
Couple of coins here, a couple of coins there. The new Everett Dirksen saying, gosh, yeah. Crazy.
We had mortgage applications. They fell by 4.9% last week. We see home buyers are pulling away from summer's expensive and competitive housing market. Interest rates are seem to be settling a little bit for the mortgages. Total mortgage application volume fell 4.9% last week compared with the previous week. And this is according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. There was 12% fewer applications compared with the same week 1 year ago. Applications for mortgages to purchase a home led the decline, falling 6% for the week, and more new listings are coming on the market this summer, but buyers are bumping up against high prices and multiple offers. We seem to have like cash buyers. They seem to have the upper hand, as sellers would rather not deal with appraisals that might not meet those higher prices. And if June is anything like May, demand is still high, but sales will be lower.
Yeah, and a monthly demand index from real estate broker Redfin found the same number of people were requesting home tours in May as in April, but the number of buyers making offers fell 17% from last year at the same time. You know, Redfin's head of analytics, said people listing their homes for sale in higher numbers this April and May is good news for buyers and good news for home sales. But he continues by saying, but it's still not enough to satisfy buyer demand, which means price increases will likely continue. Now, affordability, Melody, is clearly weakening. Purchase applications were just 1% higher compared with a year ago when mortgage rates were, a lot lower, several points lower. The average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage with conforming loan balances of $453,100 or less increased negligibly to 4.84% from 4.83% the week before.
Well, Joel Kahn, he's an MBA economist, has concerns over the trade between the U.S. and China persisting last week has caused the Treasury rates to decrease 5 basis points over the week. He says these concerns outweighed positive news on housing starts and a generally bullish view in the second quarter of U.S. growth. I think we're going to talk a little bit about Mnuchin and what he's expecting to see on U.S. growth for this second quarter. But we've had applications to refinance a home loan which are a little more rate sensitive. They fell also, down 4% for the week and off 27% compared with a year ago. So homeowners today are less likely to refinance, even if they want to take cash out of the increasingly equity-rich homes.
Hmm. Well, turning our attention to Washington, Melody, as listeners may have heard by now, Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy announced just a little while ago that he's going to be retiring from the bench on July 31st. Real big news. Obviously, this could have profound implications for the future direction of the court, possibly for decades to come. You know, a topic that Melody and possibly I will take up on upcoming financial survival shows. For today, however, Mark Janis, he stands as the hero of many non-union public sector employees. And at the same time, he's no doubt a big heel in the sides of pro-union employees. The Supreme Court ruled 5-4 today that non-union workers cannot be forced to pay fees to public sector unions. The case is one of the most hotly anticipated of this term. Some experts, Melody, had said a holding in favor of the plaintiff, Mr. Janis, would be the most significant court decision effective collective bargaining in decades. Janis, who's an employee at the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services, asked the court last summer to overrule a 40-year-old Supreme Court decision. That decision found that public sector unions could require employees affected by their negotiations to pay for so-called agency or fair share fees. Those fees approved by the court in the 1977 case Abood versus the Detroit Board of Education cover collective bargaining costs, such as contract negotiations, but have always been meant to exclude political advocacy.
Well, he argued that the $45 monthly fee to AFSCME was unconstitutional. He said the fees infringed on his First Amendment rights and that the fees were a form of political advocacy. He argued that there was little distinction between requiring employees to fund unions that engage in the political lobbying and require them to fund political groups. The court has agreed with Janice's argument, compelling individuals to mouth support for views they find objectionable violates that cardinal constitutional command, and in most contexts, any such effort would be universally condemned. And that was written by Justice Samuel Alito, who authored the court's opinion in the case.
Yeah, now Lauren Novak, who's a partner at the law firm Schiff Hardin, who's represented both labor unions and employers over the years, said there's no doubt that this decision profoundly impacts whether public sector unions will exist in the future. Without the ability to collect fair share fees, he says many may not survive. You know, obviously, not surprisingly, labor activists and unions immediately criticized the court's ruling. UAW workers President Gary Jones said today's decision is yet another effort to put obstacles in front of working men and women to join collectively behind the power of a unified voice. And in a harshly worded dissent, Justice Elena Kagan wrote that by overturning Abood, the court was improperly overturning established precedent, and wrote that the decision will have large-scale consequences. We shall see, Melody.
Yes, we shall see. I just want to go on, and today there was a report by the CBO, your previous employer.
Yeah.
where the U.S. debt burden set to break records in early 2030. Debt as a share of the United States economy is on track to blow through the previous World War II era record within 2 decades and keep rising from there. This came from the CBO office today in its annual long-term budget report. Now, what they're doing is they're generally assuming no change in current laws, no change growing budget deficits. And I'm thinking, oh, how can you really project something so many years out based on no changes from today. I mean, that's really kind of...
Well, you know, in their defense, it's been a long tradition, in fact, since their founding in 1974, that their so-called baseline, which does, you know, does assume current policy remains the same over its projecting period, and that gives Congress, members of Congress, you know, a benchmark from which to judge the impact of any legislation that they propose. So, you know, I think to make clear, they're not forecasting that there won't be any policy changes, that in fact that there will be none. And so it gives Congress, you know, notice that, hey, you know, if nothing else changes for better or for worse, you know, this is as bad, you know, as it is, as it's going to get.
Well, you know, and you're right. If you go back to this, you said 74?
Yeah.
You didn't have the big degree of changes that and the challenges that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you have Congress looking at this, I mean, it's just like, I mean, how credible, you know, and I get that. I mean, 2030 is not that far away, or 2028. I mean, they're talking about the deficits to push debt to almost 100% of GDP by 2028. I thought we were already at 105 GDP.
Well, we are if you include all debt, including intragovernmental debt.
Yeah.
The CBO usually reference percentage of debt as GDP in terms of debt held by the public. So it's a lower figure.
All right. But
you're right, it is. It's already
there.
It's our GDP.
But they go on and they talk about no change in current laws or growing budget deficits would push debt held by the public from the current level of 78% of the economy to 100% of gross domestic by 2028 and 152% by 2048.
Good.
And
God.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're not going to get there anyway.
I figured, yeah, right. 2048.
We're going to be at 152% of GDP by 2020. But based on this report that they did, this would be the highest in the nation's history by far. And the current record for debt as a share of GDP was set in 1946 when it hit 106%. Debt as a share of the economy, of course, is projected to exceed that level in fiscal 2034 under the latest projections. So, again, I think the whole point of this is just to show, I mean, if everything all stays the same, nothing changes after this report was done, it's all over in 2030. And that's not that far away.
Yeah.
So.
And it also means that, you know, as future budgets are, you know, are passed, we will have additional debt on top of their current projections. So you're right. This is, people should view that as a floor, not as a ceiling.
Right.
You know, at a minimum.
Oh, heavens, we're at break. 1-800-375-4188. Discount gold and silver. We'll be right back.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Heading into the break, we're talking about the CBO, and the reason that we're going to head over to the student loan debt. And on May 31st, the total public debt outstanding of the U.S. government stood at $21.145 trillion. Of that amount, $1.211 trillion was borrowed so that Uncle Sam could be in the business of making student loans.
Yay!
Over $1 trillion of that sum total was borrowed after Obama took the student loan industry on March 30th, 2010. As trends go, the history of the United States government's borrowing to fund student loans looks like an ugly hockey stick, the kind that we have negative implications for the population. And that certainly is true for those Americans who have that level of debt, student loan debt. So laws make it nearly impossible for recipients of the federal direct student loans to gain relief from the burden of debt, so much so that a number of federal judges are now considering upending the laws written by Congress that make student loans largely exempt from being discharged in bankruptcy proceedings.
Yeah, boy, I'll tell you, it was a lot easier back in the day when, you know, you're writing a check for $51.71 a month. And maybe I think it was another $10.45 every 3 months. Thank you, inflation, said the 2018 college graduate. Well, speaking of optimism, Melody, Treasury yeah. Secretary Steven Mnuchin is optimistic on U.S. economic growth. He said this morning, "We're excited. This is the six-month anniversary of tax cuts, and we're expecting a big second-quarter GDP number." Now, as we know, the president signed the Republican tax overhaul in December, which lowered the corporate tax rate from 35% to 21% and lowered across-the-board rates for individuals as well. Mnuchin today cited the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta's projected GDP growth of 4.7% for the second quarter. You know, he's quoted as saying, "I have no idea whether it be that high, but a year ago people were laughing when we talked about 3% GDP. We have an economy that's here because of the president's tax plan, the president's regulatory relief, and we always said trade is part of this." Now, Melody, not to offend anybody, but, you know, my question is, what is Steven Mnuchin smoking? Because whatever it is, yeah, it seems to be causing major hallucinations in the psyche of our Secretary of Treasury. You know, talk about cherry picking. I mean, here's our top Dollar Century cabinet member, just happens to choose the highest, most advantageous number out there, and then claims to what? Boost the stock market confidence? Keep that robust economy going? I mean, yeah, most economists are expecting second quarter GDP growth to exceed 4%. And a good bit of it could be the result of the December tax cuts, particularly the corporate tax cuts. But let's make it clear. Those cuts are mainly benefiting big corporations that we now know are using the lower tax rates to initiate stock buybacks to line the pockets of their stockholders and officers, not the bank accounts of their workers. You know, individuals who seem to have gone on a spending spree in the first half of the year because the tax cuts are starting to realize that, you know, the paltry increases in their paychecks will barely pay the interest on the credit cards they've been using to buy new things.
You know, and you're so correct. And I don't even know how it's going to be over 4%. Forget the 4%, 4.7. Most economists, and the thing of it is, when do they actually figure the earnings? Because we've seen the dollar getting stronger, and that's going to make the earnings weaker, you know, for Wall Street.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think.
So
it'll be interesting. Lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Yeah.
That's how.
So it kind of makes you wonder what the third quarter is going to be like. And I saw where Larry Kudlow must have recovered from his health issue that he had when President Trump was over at North Korea at the summit. And, you know, he's beginning to bring on more economists and so forth. And we all know that Larry Kudlow is a strong dollar believer. He mm-hmm. thinks that the strong dollar solves everything. Well, Larry, this isn't the 1970s. This isn't the 1980s. And I can't see where this strong dollar, and we all know it's going to be weaker. So I and maybe that's the point. Maybe part of it is wanting a stronger dollar to hurt. I mean, not only does it hurt us, but it also makes more because everything is traded, all commodities are traded in the dollar, it makes everything else expensive for all those other foreign countries,
other nations,
for consumers. Maybe this is some sort of a, you know, play into the tariffs and, you know, so forth. I don't know, but we all know we can't have a stronger dollar for long. And I mean, certainly that is the biggest impact that we've seen on the gold and silver prices is the strength in the dollar that we've seen over the past couple weeks. And I don't know if... So what do you want to talk about next, Dave?
Doesn't matter. We can talk about, you know, another big German bank becoming bullish on gold, or we can stick with Larry Kudlow and some of the things he's saying about, you know, the U.S. is not retreating on, you know, our strong position against China.
Well, there were some reports that it showed that the administration was backing off some of the strong trade talks and or words that were and statements that were being released from the White House. And he did say Larry Kudlow said the administration's approach towards China shouldn't be characterized as a retreat. Instead, characterized the decision to use a committee to determine when Chinese-owned companies should be halted from taking ownership in U.S. firms as simply a modernization that will protect the U.S. technology. Mm-hmm. And the idea of softer or harder is really beside the point. Kudlow told Fox Business News Network Stuart Varney that business, that's really not the intent. We're not driving there. I'm not quite sure what he meant by that. We're not driving there.
That's a good question.
You know, so... Kudlow spoke the same day President Donald Trump announced his backing of an overhaul for the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. And under these rules, the House overwhelmingly approved. The committee will have increased authority to block China from moving in on U.S. tech-related companies. The Senate is also likely to approve the measure called the Foreign Investment Risk Review Modernization Act. The move has seen at least a mild retreat from leaks that the White House was planning to use authority beyond these, the CIF, IUS, the CFIUS, to stop China from acquiring U.S. technology.
Yeah, Steve Mnuchin called the leak bad and probably just made up. But Kudlow reiterated that Washington is hoping to resolve its differences with China But in the meantime, it's going to remain vigilant. He said it's not meant to be harder or softer. It's going to be very comprehensive and very effective at protecting our technological family jewels in the U.S. He called the approach CFIUS Plus and an updated, modernized version. You know, news of the administration's China approach helped boost stocks earlier this morning, although obviously they were off their highs after Kudlow spoke.
Well, you know, Larry Summers, the economist, he said earlier today that the Chinese company's leadership in some technologies are not the result of theft from the United States. That's a rebuttal to the premise behind President Trump's trade actions against China. You ask me where China's technological progress is coming from. It's coming from terrific entrepreneurs who are getting the benefit of huge government investments in basic science. That's what I said. Not those words. He made it sound a little more professional. Of course, he gets paid the big bucks. But he says it's coming from an educational system that's privileging excellence, concentrating on science and technology. And, of course, Summers, and I believe personally that Bill Clinton sold a lot of this technology to China. And, of course, Summers was the former Treasury Secretary under Bill Clinton. So he might be defending their position his former boss in this statement too. But I do agree with it. It's business. You know, these multinational corporations want to do there. They, you know, it's all about the dollar. And if China says you got to do this, it's up to that multinational corporation to say, no, we don't want to give you our trade secrets or our technology secrets. But it's up for them to make that decision. So if anything, our government should go after the multinational corporations.
Yeah, there you go. Right on.
Those were at fault. Those are the ones who did the deals. The White House said this morning that the government will rely on the newly strengthened Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States to deal with concerns about the intellectual property theft.
Yeah, I mean, that's different from earlier this week when reports suggested that the administration was going to look to block companies with 25% or more of Chinese ownership from buying certain U.S. tech-related firms. You know, the Chinese investment measures that were unveiled today were less restrictive than those floated earlier in the week. Gave at least a temporary boost to Wall Street, where traders and investors were concerned about, you know, the issue leading to, a trade war with China. Mnuchin again says, we're not singling out China, but we will protect technology transfer to China as we will to other important areas. Now, in response to the Trump administration's move, Summers said today, the real approach to maintaining technological leadership is through leading technologically, not through trying to hold China down. A difference of opinion, wouldn't you say, Melody?
A little bit. You know, we talked a little bit about this article about where the China's, I think I touched with Butch and I talked a little bit about this, where the Chinese acquisitions and investments in the United States fell 92%. Is that a big drop?
That's fallen in half, right?
Yeah, you'd think. To just $1.8 billion in the first 5 months of this year. And these numbers come from the consulting and research firm Rhodium Group. The net Chinese deal flow to the U.S. during the time was a negative $7.8 billion. This is a sharp drop in the second half of last year as pressure from both Beijing and the Trump administration curbed a recent surge in cross-border investment. So completed Chinese deals, the United States hit a record of $46 billion in 2016 and dropped to $29 billion in 2017.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I wonder, the new U.S. tariffs could give Chinese manufacturers the incentive to produce more in America. That'll be interesting. It looks like transactions in health and biotech The big changes. Chinese deals in the U.S. in those areas rose from 9% last year to 58% of the total so far this year. Before we run out of time, Melody, China's currency slipped markedly in the last week to the point where it's trading at December lows against the U.S. dollar, and that's prompting speculation that China is willing to weaken its currency to fight U.S. tariffs and trade threats. But, you know, analysts say that while the currency has made a clear move lower since, you know, the trade rhetoric has flared up, the likelihood of China devaluing its currency despite our president is very low. So for now, does it mean that the currency's sudden drop is just a coincidence, or is it part of a well-conceived plan? What say you?
Both.
I love it.
A little bit of each. We all know governments manipulate their currencies, and we do, they do, you know, and, you know, however it helps, they will do so. And I think that will be the one item that has to be addressed in order to continue any type of global trade, you know, as these countries are beginning to, you know, fight out for their little piece of the pie, you know, for global trade and whatever they can escape with, it's going to have come down to currencies, because that's how a large part of it is, you know, that's how they defend their and their abilities to maneuver. So it's an interesting and a long going process. And in the meantime, everyone, I'm going to bring it all back to our debt. A lot of these are distractions, trades, tariffs, the fights, the bickering, the tit for tats. Ladies and gentlemen, it comes back to the debt of this country. It's too great to be paid, and your purchasing power will be eliminated. We're going to be back tomorrow, so please make sure you tune in for myself and Butch. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. Bye-bye.